Like, how do we maintain the relevance of our garments, of our fashion items? So making them last and be of good quality is one. But if they can engage with you, if you can scan a QR code on your item and get new content, and because you have this item, you get special access and you have this world of around it, that changes our relationship with clothing. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they're talking to you from your closet, which they never did before.
That's a terrifying concept, just as from a personal level. I still have t-shirts from high school. Like, they don't need to talk to anyone about anything they've seen.
It's often said that fashion can be an outward representation of our soul, of our identity, of how we want the world to perceive ourselves, like living with our heart on our sleeve. But what if there was a way to actually live with your values on your sleeve? And those values weren't just theoretical, but you could scan them like a QR code and understand exactly what it is that I believe in and how I want those beliefs expressed in my choices vis-a-vis the things I choose to wear on my body. Well, that future is not so far away. My name is Lex Kiefhaber. Welcome to another episode of Who's Saving the Planet? Today on the podcast, we have Auslich Mangusdottir. She is the founder and CEO of Katla, and she is many things. This was a fascinating conversation because not only did we dig into the brand that she has created now, Katla, and how they are building a more sustainable paradigm for the fashion industry interwoven with cutting-edge technologies like NFTs, but she also has this incredible perspective of what the fashion industry is and where it has come from. Auslich was the founder, the co-founder, and the CEO of the luxury e-commerce site Moda Operandi, which she launched, and when she did it, took the world by storm, sort of at the beginning of this e-commerce wave. Auslich was a senior executive at the Gilt Group. She worked at McKinsey. She was a corporate attorney from Deloitte. And to boot, if that's not enough, she is a Fulbright scholar and holds an MBA from Harvard Business School. This conversation was absolutely fascinating because she has the ability to look around the corner to see what's coming next in the world of fashion and sort of in the world of commerce in general for consumers. So this is my conversation with Auslich, the CEO and founder of Katla. Stick around.
But first, we've got a special offer for our Who's Saving the Planet listeners. The team at Katla has created a unique $100 off coupon code for shopping at katla.com. That's katla.com. So when you get to checkout, put in the code PLANET100. That's PLANET100 at checkout, and you will get $100 off your order. Katla is not a sponsor of the show. We just love what they're doing, and we would love to share their products with you guys. So check it out, katla.com, and at checkout, put in the code PLANET100.
Auslich, welcome to Who's Saving the Planet podcast. How did I do?
That was fantastic. You did great. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on.
I'm thrilled to have you on. As listeners of this know, I've spent years thinking about the fashion industry, our relationship with textiles and manufacturing, and we've talked to a number of people on this, and I'm so excited about your perspective because you've seen it evolve from the first sort of primordial days of e-commerce all the way through creating your own fashion brand and shepherding that into the world. And so let's start there. Tell us a little bit about Katla, what it is, and why you created it.
Yes, thank you. So Katla is a brand that I started working on back in 2019. And as you mentioned, I've been in the fashion space a long time and have always been trying to figure out ways to make the industry more efficient and better serve customers around the world. But only in more recent years did I start really realizing the impact that the fashion industry is having on our world. Hmm. In 2019, I wasn't necessarily looking to do another startup, having done a couple before, But as I started looking at the landscape of what's going on in the fashion industry and all this buzz around sustainability, I still felt there aren't enough brands tackling the big problems in a big enough way. Mm. I felt like a lot of people are making small incremental steps, which is, you know, all of that is of course helpful, but I felt like we need to totally rethink how we're creating fashion. Mm-hmm. It's not enough just to tweak the old ways of doing things. Some of the extraordinary numbers, if you just start thinking about them, we produce over 100 billion garments every year, and over 50 billion of them end up in landfill within 12 months. Mm-hmm. And a big portion of those actually never needed to be produced. They were just overproduction because the fashion industry is historically so bad at matching supply and demand. Mm-hmm. So as I started looking at some of these issues, I decided, you know, I want to play my little part in trying to figure out a different way to do a fashion brand. I came up with the concept of Katla. Katla is, by the way, the name of an Icelandic volcano. I am originally Icelandic, and
hence Katla my is... butchering of the attempt at properly pronounce yes. your name. So I appreciate your grace on that.
Yes, yes. You have to be Icelandic or Norwegian to really be able to say the name. It's an old Icelandic name.
But it's anyway, a beautiful name. And so don't let my deficiencies take back the majesty of your name.
Oh, thank you. No, I've learned to love it over time. But in the last years, I've also been spending more and more time in my home country and really reconnecting with the nature there. So I felt like it's very appropriate to name the brand after this big force of nature, which is the Katla volcano. And Katla is also the Icelandic female name. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, this brand name represents two things that the brand, you know, wants to protect, which is nature and support women and particularly women mm-hmm. that are working in the fashion industry and often in poor conditions. And, you know, I realized that, you know, by creating something new, I have the opportunity to also kind of redefine how we do things. Didn't have to try to fix a legacy system. I could design from scratch a way of working. But of course, there have been learnings over time and things we have tweaked. But one of the big things I wanted to tackle with Katla was this overproduction issue. Mm-hmm. So from the beginning, And I see Katla almost as much a concept as it is a brand. It's a concept for a way of doing business in the fashion industry. But so from the beginning, we applied small batch and on-demand manufacturing to remove that inventory buildup. That's such a big problem in the industry. And, you know, additionally, we tried to look at every aspect of the supply chain, and we're, of course, far from perfect. You know, every day we try to move more and more in the right direction, and we're learning along the way. But material selection was, of course, another important component. And that's an area where our thinking changed over time. But what I'm particularly excited about now is our use of seaweed blends in our fabric selection. And it's actually Icelandic seaweed that we're using. And as I started working on the brand, I realized that the seaweed that's being used in the fashion industry is primarily coming from Iceland. And that seaweed has these magical qualities of being 20 times more effective than land trees at carbon sequestration. So as the seaweed is growing, it is sequestering carbon. And additionally, the seaweed is great in the fabric in terms of it just feels really good against the skin. It's soft and it's good for you. So this is a fabric component that I've started to incorporate more and more. And my goal is eventually to have seaweed as a component of everything we make.
So let's start at the top then. When you think about creating a line of fashion. You have to start with what materials we're going to use, and you chose to incorporate seaweed. We've had the wonderful women from Keel Labs on to really champion the use of this type of product in the textile world, which is great. Then I've heard it was like a third, where when you make garments, a third of them never get sold, a third of them are returned, and a third of them you actually sell. And so I don't know, is that somewhere in the realm of...
Yeah, I think it's actually 30 to 40% that never sell. But yeah, so that's 30, roughly...
Right. And so when you're thinking about your economics on that, that also means that one thing that you sell needs to pay for two more things that will never generate revenue, which is driving down the cost. You need to drive down the cost of both your material goods and your labor usage, which is engendering lots of issues around treating people fairly, making sure that labor conditions are humane, and also not using the most extractive or pollutant things in the planet that happen to be the cheapest. So that just-in-time manufacturing sort of circumvents the idea of overproduction. But it's also hard, right? It's hard to be able to understand how to do that quickly in a way to meet what is sort of our insatiable need for instant gratification, right? We're used to, like, you know, Amazon has done a wonderful job of convincing us that we click a button and it shows up like in our pocket within 30 seconds. So how did you think about incorporating that just-in-time manufacturing model while still meeting sort of the consumer expectations of getting something with the speed that we're used to?
Yeah. I first want to go back to your comment on this, because it's extraordinarily important to realize that often people say that sustainable fashion is more expensive and can't be as profitable. A lot of people believe that. But if one of the things you're trying to tackle is this overproduction and the fact that there is so much leftover inventory that you're not selling or selling at a huge discount, it really turns out that a sustainable way of working is actually a more profitable way as well. So sustainability and profitability go very much hand in hand. So thank you for picking up on that. I think that's very important.
Sustainability is like catch-all word, right?
Yes.
I mean, it means something to everyone.
I know. I don't like that word. But in this case, the less wasteful practices or the low waste practices and profitability go hand in hand. So your positive environmental impact and profitability go hand in hand here. And that should give you more budget to invest in good fabrics and pay decent wages and provide good working conditions.
Totally.
Yeah.
And the second part about that, which we're definitely going to talk about, is the fashion industry it is built on this idea of an ephemeral quality. Something, once you wear it, the diminishing returns, right? If you keep wearing things over time, you are less and less fashionable until it's 20 years later and they're back in style. And so one of the biggest problems is this idea of, like, how many times do you actually wear something? Because if you bought something that is a very high quality and you wore it for the next 10 years, that's the most sustainable thing that you could buy.
For sure.
Whereas, you know, you're buying something from Shein or what have you, and you wear it twice and it disintegrates. And so that is obviously antithetical to the idea of using things responsibly. But we digress. Let's go back to that first point.
Yes.
Here's your idea. I want to make beautiful clothes. I want to make them out of the most sustainable things, including seaweed, which is native to Iceland. And but I want to do it quickly. I want to be able to do it with low UKs. So how do you start that process of creating the manufacturing capacity to meet that vision?
Yes. And you're right that this is difficult, and it has been the most difficult part of this business, I would say, is getting that manufacturing right. We still have a long way to go. I realized that, as you said, people are used to instant gratification. If they're ordering a runway dress, they may, which is my previous business that I founded, Moda Operandi, was based on selling straight from the runway. And there people were willing to wait
right
for months, but that's for very special high-end items. And Katla is selling more everyday items. We're selling loungewear and casual items. So realize people aren't willing to wait months for those, or very few. Some would be so environmentally focused that they are willing to wait, but most people want the items fast. So we've worked hard to, and this is all really about, we don't have our own factories. We've developed relationships with factories. So we've identified the factories that are like-minded and willing to work in this way. And we've gotten to a place now where we are working with factories that are able to turn our items around, typically in 3 to 5 days. Mm-hmm. So if a customer places an order on the site, that order then goes directly to a manufacturer. It is created. We do have fabric on hand, but all of the items have kind of been set up in the systems with the manufacturers up front. And then that is manufactured then in the next 3 to 5 days and shipped to the end consumer. So there is still a time lag versus ordering something on Amazon with the next day delivery.
Right.
This takes a little bit longer, but I feel like most people are okay waiting that period unless it's for something very special that they need it, tomorrow or in the next couple of days.
I wonder if that also you think you're, oh, I'm sorry, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to add though, I think this model is not gonna really take off until we can shorten that timeline even further. So the goal is to get that timeline down to 1 to 2 days of manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And at that point, most consumers won't really feel a difference for an on-demand model versus a traditional model.
I wonder, so when you brought up the idea of like haute couture, right? You're going to buy something that is incredibly special or unique, and you're going to wait a long time for it. There's this long psychological principle around how humans think that if it's harder to get something or to attain something, it's more valuable. So one of those things is like there used to be this moment where if you were going to sign up for anything on the internet that's a subscription model, you had to take this quiz. And the quiz was like 15, 18 questions long, right? And half of that was to try to customize it. But the other half was that you could see that if people go through this process of having to work, then the thing that they receive, they say, well, I worked so hard, this must be worth something. Otherwise, I wouldn't have worked so hard. So maybe there's that sense of if you wait for it, it requires patience, which is, work for most people. Perhaps that has like some effect on like reducing returns or increasing the longevity of the pieces.
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct. And I do think for those who take the time to consider why do I have to wait, the reason is because it's being made now to not create waste, and it's being made in a good factory and a quality item that's meant to last. For those who really think about that, they would see the value in it and hopefully cherish that item for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. But not everyone that shops on our site is even thinking about that. They might just like the style and buy right. it because of that.
Well, you're an expert on that. You've literally, if there's one person that understands how to anticipate what people are going to like from a style perspective, you built a very successful marketplace driven on that. So I guess, why did you start with loungewear then? That's a pretty big departure from what Mode Operandi was geared on.
Sure. So the thinking around Cutlow was first of all, that I wanted it to be accessible to a broader group of people, not just the top shoppers spending the most money. And the motor price point is high in the e-commerce world. Beautiful yeah. items, but expensive. So my goal here was to be able to have broader impact. I wanted to be able to reach a bigger group of people. And so I ended up with a contemporary price point, wanting to be at a contemporary price point. I felt like mass market price point is not where I want to be. I don't want to send the message that fashion is disposable or should only be worn once. I think it's important that people value the clothing they buy and that they make a decision to invest in it. But I still wanted it to be accessible to a large group of people. So that was kind of the starting point. But in terms of the loungewear specifically, that was very much impacted by COVID. So Katla went live January 28th of 2020, so 6 weeks before lockdown. And actually, if you had looked at our original assortment, it was broader. There were trousers, jackets, quite a few dresses. But because of COVID, the items that started selling were our hoodies first. And so we started doing more of that. So hoodies and sweats. And that's really what sold for quite some time. So over time, we evolved to becoming a loungewear brand. It wasn't the initial plan.
To meet the customers where they are.
Yes, yes.
I had an opportunity to speak with the founders of Asket, which is a brand on your side of the pod. And they produce lots of things that are shirts and pants and what have you, sweaters. And I was like, listen, this stuff is great that you guys are making, and I personally love it, but it's all kind of aesthetically the same. You know, it has this sort of like Nordic mentality where you walk in and there's this uniformity to it, and it's lots of different sort of like shades of gray and you know, green and sort of brown. And like, in your vision, is everyone going to kind of just like look the same? You know, like, I get that the most sustainable things need to be the most enduring, but there's also this element of fashion, which is like so expressive, and like, I want it to be unique. And that's kind of asynchronous, or it's hard to be compatible with this idea of things that are going to last for a very long time. And we're not going to change our styles every quarter. And we're not going to sort of like reinvent the wheel all the time, because that takes a lot of energy and a lot of resources. So they had an answer for that. But I'd be curious about yours, like writ large. This idea of creativity and self-expression and newness in fashion, how do we fit that into the paradigms of sustainability?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's important to introduce newness. I think it's critical that our shoppers feel that the items they buy, that they don't lose their relevance after a short period of time. So that's important. But that said, introducing newness on a regular basis for our shoppers for first of all, our shoppers that have bought before to find new things that they love, but also to appeal to new customers, is important. I think in this respect, like moving away from traditional seasons is important. And this concept of discounting something at end of season because it's lost its value is something that we don't adhere to. We don't follow seasons. We don't discount items. If something doesn't sell over some period of time or doesn't sell well, we will remove that from the selection. But the idea is that these are items that have a timeless essence. That you should still feel comfortable wearing in a couple of years, and hopefully in many years, and therefore don't lose their relevance. We're not the brand you go to for an occasion wear piece. If you're going to a black tie event, you're not coming to Cutla. There are others to go to for that. But I think, you know, for those who are looking for those everyday pieces and that are elegant, timeless, beautiful, we want to be the brand for those mm-hmm. people, and that have quality and they feel good on your skin. You feel good wearing them.
Mm-hmm. But I imagine that you said in the beginning that you want to reach the most number of people and sure. have the biggest impact. It's always hard to have. So if you think about the brands that have the biggest impact right now from an environmental perspective, you're talking about your multinational brands, your VF brands, your Inditex, your H&M's, Shein. And those are also the ones that are the hardest to move, but they're working in that sort of that instant gratification, immediate disposal mindset. And so there's always this, this comes up all the time with everyone working in climate, which is we start with this idea of like a moral purity, or sort of this idea of like, here, this is the best because we have to. Right? That's sort of the impetus. You don't get into this because you want to compromise from the beginning. But in order to reach the most people, you need to affect change in the industries that are doing the most harm.
Yeah.
And that necessarily incorporates some kind of evolution to like have Cutla also serve broader needs than the timeless activewear pieces, and moving into more categories to be able to reach more people and more instances. When you think about that and scaling it, how do you imagine being able to preserve the things that are so important from that sustainability and environmental piece through the scale for more products, more people, higher volume?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very critical point because there's a couple of things. I want Katla, the brand, to have the highest level of impact, but that doesn't only mean through Katla sales. It also means through showing a different model of doing things and contributing to the conversation and really trying to push a message out there. And I think the ability to do an on-demand or on-demand manufacturing, small batch manufacturing, non-wasteful manufacturing at scale is a very critical skill set that we, you know, continue to need to refine. Over time, I agree with you that we will add more categories. I see this brand having the potential to be a broader lifestyle brand. You have to start somewhere and kind of, you know, get really good at doing something first, and then you can broaden out from there. But as the categories expand, as the model evolves, I think it is still very important for us to stay true to this core concept of wanting to reduce waste and not overproduce inventory. So that's going to mean a lot of things over time. It's not just fast on-demand manufacturing. That'll be part of it. It'll also be, you know, be really good at understanding, anticipating the needs in terms of fabric purchases. You know, of course, leveraging the same fabrics across multiple styles is helpful, but, you know, you want to reduce waste on the fabric purchase side, but also have enough for your manufacturing. There's, you know, developing better understanding of, you know, well, there are items that are your best sellers and do carry forward. So those don't necessarily have to be manufactured on demand. There, if you get really good at predicting, you can hold some inventory of them. The key is not to not ever have inventory. The key is to not create inventory that doesn't sell, right? Mm-hmm. So getting a better understanding of that. There's also these hybrid manufacturing models where you have partially finished goods, and then based on the consumer orders, you finalize them. So we might have a basic black hoodie, but it comes in different variations. So there are different prints that go on it, different patches that go on it. So you can have the hoodies ready, but those final components get added at the end.
That's cool. Like a modular customization process.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think, you know, this ability, you know, there are more and more people in the industry thinking about how do we tackle this problem in an effective way, and how do we do it at scale? And, you know, I don't think you know, there aren't a lot of great examples out there today of bigger brands doing it, but this is an important thing to tackle, and it's something we want to be a part of this evolution of the industry of showing, and we are part of a UN project going on right now with one of our mentors, John Torbeck, is overseeing, that has this goal of minimizing wasteful overproduction in fashion companies of all scales, and, you know, bringing to bear AI to better predict, various tech solutions to support this. And so Katla is one of the case examples that is being highlighted in this project. But
very, very cool.
I think this is one of the important future waves in the industry.
I think now's a good time to say that for listeners of this, there is a special offer that you are offering to actually experience the Katla product line.
Yes, exactly. We wanted to incentivize and allow your users to test the line. So we created a special discount code for listeners, which would be valid for 1 month from the time this airs. And so basically at checkout, so you go to katla.com, you select your item, and then you use the discount code PLANET100. So that's a gift credit for $100.
Which is incredibly generous, not like just 20% off, but $100 gift credit, which is tremendous. We here at Who's Saving the Planet, this is not an ad. We are not paid for this. We just love supporting people that are doing good things. So that code will be in the show notes as well. We'll let people know about it. Planet 100. Okay. I want to ask.
And all lowercase.
All lowercase.
Yes.
For us spelling savants out there, these details are remarkably important. Real quick, Europe, the digital product passport. It's being rolled. Is that something that you think about often, or is that worth spending some time talking about?
Yes, definitely. It's something I'm really, really interested in, actually.
So for our listeners, then, the digital product passport, it's the idea that the EU is rolling out, which would require every textile product, so basically everything in fashion, to have an indication of how it was made, how much environmental impact went into making it, what with carbon usage, water usage, waste, and the materials that was used. And this will be affixed either through a QR code or an RFID tag to products everywhere. So you can go to a product, scan it, and get sort of a biography of that product itself.
Yeah. So first of all, we built a very basic version of this into Cutla from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So you'll see that every Cutla item has a unique number on it. And in some cases, this is incorporated as an external design element. So our hoodies, our sweatsuits, they'll have patches on the sleeves, many of them, that have, for example, KF001. The first item that I purchased on Cutla. If you go onto the site and you type that along with your last name, you get the story of how the garment was made. Mm. So there's information about the fabric certifications, the factory that made it. So this is a simple system that we built. And I think it's absolutely critical in terms of consumers shouldn't just take your word for it, being able to really, you know, look into it.
Transparency is the first step to accountability.
Yeah, exactly. We've also looked at a lot of interesting technologies that are out there supporting this. We will be partnering with others to provide a more complete picture here over time. It so happens that my husband's company, Ivy, they have provided a solution, or they have developed a patented technology for transferring tokens easily from a garment to a consumer, just with a scan with your phone. And this token can be a unique identifier of a garment or a handbag, etc. And the user, what's beautiful about it is the user doesn't need to have any tech knowledge. They don't need to have a crypto wallet. The technology creates a wallet for you and transfers the token into it. And this token can serve as this unique passport for the item. It has a serial number. It, of course, requires the brands to build that into their manufacturing to have the chips or the tags.
Does it have value? It can be exchanged for something, or...
The idea is not that it has value in itself, but that it provides information. It verifies ownership and it shows the authenticity of the item. But additionally, it opens up the whole world of the item. So brands can this is a relatively new technology, but the brands can customize the experience that it lives in the Ivy wallet and continuously update it. But every item would have, if you, let's say you buy five different items from a specific brand, from Cutla, let's say, each item you have will have a separate token associated with it and the information about how it's made and where it was made and where the fabrics came from. But additionally, kind of other content about the world of Cutla, video content, new images, can give access to gated content, access to limited edition drops, etc. So that's I think a very, very exciting technology and can help enable resale as well.
Resale. So like an NFT use case sort of married with some sort of crypto tokenization that also is a content conduit. That's a lot of words. That's even me saying all that. I'm not entirely sure what I just said, but I guess it all makes sense. Yeah.
and yes, it is an NFT, but that's, you know, when people think of an NFT, they think of, you know, often like a piece of art.
Crazy world that we live in these days. And so that's available. Is that available on your products now?
We are incorporating that now. So that's kind of the next step.
I think that's where we're going to be going. There's going to be this.
Yes. And actually tying into that, if I may,
of course
we are doing. So what is available on our products right now? So we are selling now, we just launched, actually a more traditional NFT with an Icelandic artist. So these are art pieces, all one of a kind. And we are selling, I mean, traditional in the sense that there are pieces rather than just digital IDs, which as I was describing. But you can buy a hoodie with a one of a kind art piece on it. And then when you receive that, there's a QR code in the corner of the image of the hoodie, and you scan that to get your NFT. So
you really thought this from the ground up with, we're going to change the manufacturing style, we're going to change the products that we use vis-a-vis seaweed, we're going to follow our customers to what they're needing, and then we are going to digitize what is traditionally a very sort of cut and dry, commoditized product, cloth and what have you, cut and sewn, into a whole user experience that allows for accessibility, transparency, and accountability.
So some of the elements were from the beginning.
Well, yeah, you got it.
Yes. But it's also evolved over time.
But I frame that like that because, like, this isn't your first rodeo. You know, you've spent the last 15 years thinking about how people are going to buy clothes, right? When you started Moda, that was relatively revolutionary at the time, right? And so that was definitely looking around the corner of what's possible. Do you feel that same kind of energy now with this incorporation of the tokenization, the NFTs, the sort of like relationship building? So it's not just transactional, here's your thing, but it's like, here's your thing. Now this is actually a guest pass into our whole world.
Yes, 100%. There are multiple elements to that. But one is like, how do we maintain the relevance of our garments, of our fashion items? So making them last and be of good quality is one. But if they can engage with you, if you can scan a QR code on your item and get new content, and because you have this item, you get special access and you have this world of around it, that changes our relationship with clothing. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden they're talking to you from your closet, which they never did before.
That's a terrifying concept, just as from a personal level. I still have t-shirts from high school. Like, they don't need to talk to anyone about anything they've seen. But the challenge for that's hard, right? People's attentions right now are short. And so that it is there, I suppose, is the first step. But creating something of value that people actually want to engage with and want to allocate their time to, that is no trivial task.
Sure. Sure. No, I, of course. And, you know, I think it'll vary, you know, this type of technology, how it's used would vary brand by brand. For some, just proving authenticity and providing information about the supply chain is critical. And that is a critical component. So mm-hmm. at least you're solving for that. But if you can manage to also make it entertaining and allow there an additional way for your consumers to engage with the product, I think that's really exciting. I mean, people often tell me that because the QR code is on our best-selling hoodies and sweats is so apparent on the outside, often people will ask them, what does this do? Can I scan it? Like, it becomes a conversation piece.
Well, that's sort of the idea of luxury fashion to begin with, right? That's why all of the, I mean, that's the idea, is to be an exemplar of something. Like, you wear something to make a statement. And perhaps that brings things full circle, where it's like, if that statement that I'm making is, please scan me, I guess, in that world.
Yes. Like,
see the values that I have. And it's this sort of like positive virtue signaling aspect where you're like, yes, I'm living my values through my choices and I'm doing it out loud. And you can literally point your phone at me and see what my values are. That's both fascinating and terrifying. Like it's an idyllic, but also just like towing the line of some Black Mirror episode of, you know, us all wearing some whatever the Google Glass version of this, so we can just see, you know, everyone's carbon consumption based on their QR codes on their clothes.
Yeah.
I guess one of my questions was like, you looked around the corner once with Moda, and now perhaps this seems to be sort of where you see the world of fashion evolving for this next iteration of consumers wanting to be able to live their values through their choices.
Yes, 100%. I mean, the world has changed so dramatically. I will say with Moda, I mean, one of the core parts of that concept was actually to immediately tie designers with consumers around the world, to which in itself was helping to solve this issue of overproduction, because consumers were placing orders before production decisions were being locked down. So the brands were getting some early information about what would likely sell. But at the time, I thought about, you know, my thinking around that was more from a, this is interesting from a financial standpoint to minimize wasteful overproduction. And, you know, now, yes, there's a financial component, but also this huge environmental component to that. But I do believe that more and more consumers care about this. They do want to. I think it's hard for consumers to know which fashion to buy. There's a lot of buzz out there, and you know, people do want to look good. They want to buy clothes that look good, but most people also want to do good for the environment. If they understand which brands are really, really trying to take positive steps. So I think more and more people are concerned about this. I think more and more people want to understand what the story behind their garments. You know, we want to understand the food we eat. We want to know what went into that. And what we put on our skin is extremely important as well. It actually does impact our health, et cetera. So I think there's an increasing interest in that. There's an increasing interest in the environmental impact. And the younger the consumer, which is good for our future, I think, and for the future of the industry, is the younger the consumer, the more this interest seems to be.
Totally. But there's a problem with that. And this is one that I feel personally with my business all the time, is that the younger the consumer, the less money they have to buy things. And so it's a matter of timing, right? Like, you are very much in the business of helping people understand what to buy, like, and have been since the whole editorial process of creating Moda, and now you're sort of coming at it from a different angle. But there's this like say-do gap, or this attitude behavior gap, where people are very keen to tell you that they want to shop their values. When it actually comes to making a purchasing decision between two things, I wonder how high up the list that is compared to things like price and fit and style.
So I think there is a subset of people, and it's still a small subset, that will have that as the number one criteria in terms of their purchasing decision, that the environmental impact. How it makes you look is still probably the most important aspect to a majority of people. So you have to have both. You have to have product that people really want to wear, but then of course it should also be as environmentally friendly as possible and transparent and apply good practices in terms of manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So hopefully eventually we'll get to a point where that's an of course, it has to be that, but then let's find the one that really looks good. But today, yes, you have to be able to provide both.
So I always end with two questions, or for you it'll be two questions, because you've led many lives. The first question I usually say is like, if you were to go back at the beginning of these things and give yourself some advice, what advice would you give you? But you've had the opportunity to see digital commerce grow in the fashion industry so much. and then also create something yourself. I wonder what advice you would give somebody who is just starting out their career or in their early stage of their career, either working within one of these big fashion companies that they know is not necessarily creating things with as fastidious an attention to sustainability. So like, how do you be a force of change from within? Or somebody who's thinking about creating their own fashion line and adhering that to the values that they have. So what advice would you give to somebody else who's sort of at that transformational beginning stage of their career?
Yeah. I mean, for someone in a big company, I think, you know, don't underestimate the ability of one individual to have an impact and make change. If you believe strongly in something, like, stand by it, you know, always follow your passion and, you know, be known for that in the organization as the person who is pushing this agenda. I think that would be in the big corporate setting. And as we discussed earlier, the big fashion brands are where we really need to see change. And that's where we're really going to see big impact if we see change there. For those starting a new brand, I think, you know, celebrate the opportunity to create something from scratch that is the way you would like it to be in terms of its impact on people, etc. I would say, you know, start slowly and test it. Get feedback from customers along the way as much as you can. That's one area where entrepreneurs sometimes fail is to go too big too fast. And I've certainly been guilty of that in the past as well. But assume that the first iteration is not the perfect and final iteration and that you will have to tweak and change. So just, you know, step by step, and don't beat yourself up if you have to change things.
What's the biggest mistake that you've made so far with Katla?
Oh, with Katla. Well, I was going to mention.
Oh, well, no. Okay. What's the biggest mistake you've made so far?
Well, so after Mode, I actually started another one called Tinker Tailor. I don't know if you came across that at all.
I've done my LinkedIn research, as I do with everyone.
And I think Tinker Tailor is a beautiful concept. It was about customization and creation of fashion. But the biggest mistake with Tinker Tailor was not the concept, but the fact that I went too big to begin with. I started two divisions. This is coming off of Moda's big success, and was just expecting the next one to take off just as quickly, which I now understand rarely happens. But with Tinker Tailor, we built the first of its kind 3D rendering technology that allowed customers to put together bodice, sleeves, skirts, and create a dress and layer fabric on top of it and embellishments. And you could see this come to life in front of you. And then we manufactured that. And additionally, we signed up over 100 designer brands to offer customizations of their fashion, with the thinking there is that many people love the runway, but, you know, some women don't want to show their arms. Some only want to wear longer dresses, et cetera. So have the designer approve some different customization options that would make the runway relevant for a broader group of women. But here, you know, it was early on in the technology. We spent a lot of money on building a technology without testing it enough along the way. And we built two divisions from the beginning, the working with the designers and our own brand. And this was an example of trying to do too much too fast. Mm-hmm. And I still believe that it was a good concept, a great concept, maybe would work better today than it did then. But yeah, so gradually.
No, you don't get battle scars without going to battle and getting wounded, right? So like, this is hard fought and hardwood.
Oh, so important. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and giving us your perspective. I think it's fascinating. I love your eye vision of where the future of fashion is going. It's going to take everyone, right? That, like, all of these things, all hands on deck, from the consumers to the manufacturers, to the distributors, to the people that are actually building the companies themselves. And so thank you so much for coming on and sharing that story. And again, everyone can go to katla.com and Planet 100.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on the program. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Auslich, the CEO and founder of Catla.
And as a special offer for our Who's Saving the Planet listeners, the team at Catla has offered a $100 off coupon. All you need to do is put in PLANET100 at checkout, and it'll take $100 off your order. That is PLANET100 at catla.com. They're not a sponsor of the show. We just love what they're doing and love what they stand for. So go check that out. It's PLANET100 at catla.com.
Our music today was prepared and crafted by the one and only James Rhodes. Today's episode was produced and edited by Matt Simon. If you would love to support us, we would love for you to just tell a friend about the podcast. Please leave a review on Apple or on Spotify. And tune in next week for another episode of Who's Saving the Planet. We have a fantastic conversation on tap for you. And of course, any feedback is welcome. Shoot us an email at hello@savingtheplanetpod.com. My name's Lex. See you next week.